And next, the story of the Uraga Jataka. Man quits his mortal frame, and so on. This story the master, while dwelling in Jetavana, told concerning a landowner whose son had died. The introductory story is just the same as that of the man who lost both his wife and father. Here, too, the master, in the same way, went to the man's house, and after saluting him as he was seated, asked him, saying, "Pray, sir, are you grieving?" And on his replying, "Yes, reverend sir, ever since my son's death I grieve," he said, "Sir, verily that which is subject to dissolution is dissolved, and that which is subject to destruction is destroyed, and this happens not to one man only, nor in one village merely, but in countless spheres and in the three modes of existence. There is no creature that is not subject to death, nor is there any existing thing that is capable of abiding in the same condition. All beings are subject to death, and all compounds are subject to dissolution. But sages of old, when they lost a son, said, 'That which is subject to destruction is destroyed,' and grieved not." And hereupon, at the man's request, he related a story of the past. Once upon a time, when Brahmadatta was reigning in Benares, the Bodhisatta was born in a Brahmin household in a village outside the gates of Benares, and rearing a family, he supported them by field labor. He had two children, a son and a daughter. When the son was grown up, the father brought a wife home for him from a family of equal rank with his own. Thus, with a female servant, they composed a household of six: the Bodhisatta and his wife, the son and daughter, the daughter-in-law, and the female servant. They lived happily and affectionately together. The Bodhisattva thus admonished the other five: "According as ye have received, give alms. Observe holy days. Keep the moral law. Dwell on the thought of death. Be mindful of your mortal state. For in the case of beings like ourselves, death is certain, life uncertain. All existing things are transitory and subject to decay. Therefore, take heed to your ways, day and night." They readily accepted his teaching, and dwelt earnestly on the thought of death. Now one day the Bodhisatta went with his son to plough his field. The son gathered together the rubbish and set fire to it. Not far from where he was lived a snake in an anthill. The smoke hurt the snake's eyes. Coming out of his hole in a rage, it thought, "This is all due to that fellow," and fastening upon him with its four teeth, it bit him. The youth fell down dead. The Bodhisatta, on seeing him fall, left his oxen and came to him. And finding that he was dead, he took him up and laid him at the foot of a certain tree, and covering him up with his cloak, he neither wept nor lamented. He said to himself, "That which is subject to dissolution is dissolved, and that which is subject to death is dead. All compound things are transitory and liable to death." And recognizing the transitory nature of things, he went on with his ploughing. Seeing a neighbor pass close by the field, he asked, "Friend, are you going home?" And on his answering yes, the Bodhisatta said, "Please then, go to our house and say to the mistress, 'You are not today as formerly to bring food for two, but to bring it for only one.' And hitherto the female slave came alone and brought the food, but today all four of you are to put on clean garments and to come with perfumes and flowers in your hands." "All right," he said, and went and spoke those very words to the Brahmin's wife. She asked, "By whom, sir, was this message given?" "By the Brahmin lady," he replied. Then she understood that her son was dead, but she did not so much as tremble. Thus, showing perfect self-control and wearing white garments and with perfumes and flowers in her hand, she bade them bring food and accompanied the other members of the family to the field. But no one of them all either shed a tear or made lamentation. The Bodhisattva, still sitting in the shade where the youth lay, ate his food, and when the meal was finished, they all took up firewood, and lifting the body onto the funeral pyre, they made offerings of perfume and flowers, and then set fire to it, but not a single tear was shed by any one. All were dwelling on the thought of death. Such was the efficacy of their virtue that the throne of Sakka, the king of the angels, manifested signs of heat, as it often did when someone on earth did a virtuous act. Sakka said, "Who, I wonder, is anxious to bring me down from my throne?" Meaning, who will take his place? Because to be born as Sakka, the king of the angels, one has to do virtue. And thus this throne becomes hot, because it no longer is deserved solely by Sakka himself. And on reflection, he discovered that the heat was due to the force of virtue existing in these people. And being highly pleased, he said, "I must go to them and utter a loud cry of exultation, like the roaring of a lion, and immediately go afterwards to fill their dwelling places with the seven treasures." And going there in haste, he stood by the side of the funeral pyre and said, "What are you doing?" "We are burning the body of a man, my lord." "It is no man that you are burning," he said. "Methinks you are roasting the flesh of some beast that you have slain." "Not so, my lord," they said. "It is merely the body of a man that we are burning." Then he said, "It must have been some enemy." The bodhisattva replied, "It is our own true son, and no enemy." "Then he could not have been a very dear as a son to you." "He was very dear, my lord." "Then why do you not weep?" Then the bodhisattva, to explain the reason why he did not weep, uttered the first stanza. "Man quits his mortal frame when joy in life is past, e'en as a snake is wont its worn-out slough to cast. No friend's lament can touch the ashes of the dead. Why should I grieve? He fares the way he had to tread." Sakka, on hearing the words of the bodhisattva, asked the Brahmin's wife, "How, lady, did the dead man stand to you?" "I sheltered him 10 months in my womb, and suckled him at my breast, and directed the movements of his hands and feet, and he was my grown-up son, my lord." "Granted, lady, that a father from the nature of a man may not weep. A mother's heart surely is tender. Why then do you not weep?" And to explain why she did not weep, she uttered a couple of stanzas as well. "Uncalled he hither came, unbidden soon to go. E'en as he came, he went. What cause is here for woe? No friend's lament can touch the ashes of the dead. Why should I grieve? He fares the way he had to tread." On hearing the words of the Brahmin's wife, Sakka asked the sister, "Lady, what was the dead man to you?" "He was my brother, my lord." "Lady, sisters surely are loving towards their brothers. Why do you not weep?" But she, to explain the reason why she did not weep, repeated a couple of stanzas as well. "Though I should fast and weep, how would it profit me? My kith and kin, alas, would more unhappy be. No friend's lament can touch the ashes of the dead. Why should I grieve? He fares the way he had to tread." Sakka, on hearing the words of the sister, asked his wife, the young man's dead man's wife, "Lady, what was he to you?" "He was my husband, my lord." "Women, surely, when a husband dies, as widows are helpless. Why do you not weep?" But she, to explain the reason why she did not weep, uttered two stanzas of her own. "As children cry in vain to grasp the moon above, so mortals idly mourn the loss of those they love. No friend's lament can touch the ashes of the dead. Why should I grieve? He fares the way he had to tread." Sakka, on hearing the words of the wife, asked the handmaid, saying, "Woman, what was he to you?" "He was my master, my lord." "No doubt you must have been abused and beaten and oppressed by him, and therefore, thinking he is happily dead, you weep not." "Speak not so, my lord, that this does not suit his case. My young master was full of long-suffering and love and pity for me, and was as a foster child to me." "Then why do you not weep?" and she, to explain why she did not weep, uttered a couple of stanzas herself. A broken pot of earth, ah, who can piece again? So too to mourn the dead is naught but labor vain. No friend's lament can touch the ashes of the dead. Why should I grieve? He fares the way he had to tread. Sakka, on hearing what they all had to say, was greatly pleased and said, "Ye have carefully dwelt on the thought of death. Henceforth ye are not to labor with your own hands. I am Sakka, king of heaven. I will create the seven treasures in countless abundance in your house. Ye are to give alms, to keep the moral law, to observe holy days, and to take heed to your ways." And thus admonishing them, he filled their house with countless wealth, and so parted from them. The master, having finished his exposition of the truth, declared the four noble truths and identified the birth. At the conclusion of the truths, the landowner attained the fruit of the first path, which is the path of Sotapanna, means he has seen the truth. At that time, Kujuttara was the female slave, Upalavana was the daughter, Rahula was the son, Kema was the mother, and I myself was the Brahmin. The end. So that's all for today. Thank you for coming to listen.